everyone, how are you doing? If you're new here, I'm Dr. Sheen, an Oxford and Cambridge graduate, a tech entrepreneur and business coach.
And welcome back to Dream Girl. I'm Sheen, your host, and today we're joined by the amazing Vimy Joshi. She is an international celebrity and fashion makeup artist. She's a TEDx speaker, and she has done a lot more cool stuff and worked with really cool people. And I'm so excited to learn so much more from her today. Hi, Vimy. How are you?
Hi, Sheen. How are you? Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Of course. Very excited to have you here. I mean, we've already discussed so many interesting things before this podcast started. So this is going to be a really great, great chat. Why don't you start by telling me, I know you're from the UK, but probably originally from India. Tell us about the story.
Okay. So I am born in Uganda, actually.
No way.
I was born in Uganda, Africa. Mm-hmm. To Indian parents. And then in 1972, Idi Amin kicked out all of the Ugandan Asians. Mm-hmm. So we ended up moving to England. Mm-hmm. And you know what it's like when an Indian family leaves India, then goes to Africa, then goes to the UK, they end up holding on to their community tighter than ever. Mm-hmm. So even though I was growing up in England, I was in Gujarat.
In olden days, Gujarat.
Yeah, in 1920s, yeah. Gujarat, in Leicester.
No way.
And then it's only when you go start going to school, and at school you're in England, British England, and then you come back to 1920s, India.
Go back to India.
So I grew up living this real juxtaposition life of two completely different cultures. And it was very interesting. During the week, I would go to British school. Weekend, I would go to Gujarati school. Mm. So I would learn how to speak Gujarati, learn about the Mahabharata, the Ramayana. And it was like living literally in between these two worlds.
How does that work? I'm sure, like, does that not lead to a lot of, like, identity questions growing up?
Well, for me, the challenge was Korea. Mm. Especially Korea was a big thing for me. I loved the fact that I had the grounding that I knew both my parents were Indian. Mm-hmm. So that was quite a grounding for me. The confusion for me was living in the British society.
Right.
Because my family were like, you have to be a doctor, lawyer, accountant, engineer. And we're talking the 80s.
Wow.
So the mentality was still 1950s, 60s mentality. Mm-hmm. Or you get married. Mm. So it was really clear cut out choices. Now, I failed everything. I failed maths, I failed chemistry, I failed history, I failed biology, and I remember being 18 years old, you know, when school had finished, everyone celebrating. I had an F, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. But I always knew I wanted to do something creative. I knew I was very creative, I was very artistic. And I would speak to my parents and go, Mom, I really want to be like a TV presenter, or I really want to be, because makeup artists didn't exist at the time.
It wasn't like a full-time job.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. No one even knew what makeup artist was in 1980s India, England. And I'm like, look, I really want to do something where I can use my personality. And they were like, stop it. Stop dreaming like this. You have failed everything, we're going to now start looking for a husband.
Oof.
And I was like, so that was my battle. Like, it was such a huge battle for me because I didn't want to get married. There was a part of me that was bursting to come out and I didn't know what to do or where to go at 18 years old.
So what did you do?
So what did I do? Yeah. So I... You know, when you pray for something, like, I really believe in the power of prayer and the universe. Mm-hmm. And my cousin at the time, she was like, look, you failed everything. Moved to London. My husband has an insurance company. Why don't you start selling insurance?
Okay.
So I'm like, yeah, I'll give him just something to get out of Leicester.
And not having to get married.
Yeah, exactly. So I moved to London, started working in my cousin's insurance company. And then at the time, can you remember, it was that big pyramid selling. Like everybody was like, you pick five people, then pick another five, you build like this. So I got into water filters. Like,
okay.
I got into water filters, right? Okay. So, and through that, I would go to these meetings every Saturday, met a group of people. And at that time, I met a friend of mine who happened to basically be in the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was like, great. So I started dating.
Okay.
And this is like, again, very, you know, I'm in the UK now, dating this person, and he happens to have a music studio.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I'm getting a little bit closer. And through that, I was like, okay, I've got some breathing space here. I'm now living in London. So I got a job as a medical rep.
Mm-hmm.
So you know the Nicorette patches and the Nicorette gum?
Yes.
I started selling them.
Okay.
And hated it because it was like, okay, at least one foot's in the medical field.
Yeah.
And one foot is, I'm kind of like in the music industry. Mm. Like it was really, really weird. And coincidentally, I met a friend at a party, and he happened to be the stylist for the band U2.
Right.
And then my other friend was a casting director. So mid-90s, you know, when that whole Spice Girls, Oasis, that whole Britpop movement happened, they were a part of it.
Nice.
So one day I was invited to a U2 concert in Cardiff, because a friend of mine was DJing there. And that concert changed the direction of my life. And that's why I'm the biggest U2 fan in the world. So I'm at the concert, and because my friend was the stylist, so I'm getting to see the concert from backstage. Now, a little girl from Leicester, now backstage at a U2 concert. Mm. It was like, dreams are coming true.
Right.
And I happened to meet the makeup artist. And she's like, oh, by the way, you know, I'm sorry I have to go. We're taking a private jet for, we're going to Italy, then we're going to Sweden, then we're going to Spain. And it was their Zooropa concert. Mm. And I'm driving back going, I'm going to Northwick Park Hospital. I'm going to this Westminster Hospital selling Nicorette patches and gum. And it was a 3-hour drive, and I'm like, look at her life and look at my life. But I was meant to be there for a reason. When I got back to London, I went straight to my friends, Lou and Finton. I'm like, I want to be a makeup artist. What do I need to do? They were like, okay, well, let's start off by you coming and being an extra on some pop videos. See if you actually really want to do it.
Mm.
You just heard somebody say that they're traveling on private jets. So,
but shadow them to see what the work actually is.
But actually find out if it's what you want to do. So medical rep during the week, backup dancer on these videos.
Dancer, I love it.
At the weekend. So I was, and then I kind of forgot about it.
Mm.
I kind of forgot about, okay, at least I'm backup dancing. So if you watch some of the videos from the early 90s, mid 90s, you will see me dancing in the back.
That's so cool.
And I loved it. I was like, at least I had something to look forward to.
Something fun.
Something fun at the weekend. Anyway, I'd forgotten about being a makeup artist.
Mm.
Now, because I was so backup dancer, I then got promoted to front backup dancer.
Right.
Where I'm actually going to be on camera now.
Yeah, right? You're visible properly.
Visible. Yeah. So there's a video. It was with Boy George, Lulu and Kim Wilde.
Mm-hmm.
And the video is called Every Woman Knows. And they wanted women from different nationalities to be represented in this video.
Mm-hmm.
So I was obviously the Indian representation. So for this, they were like, okay, can you go into makeup? So first time ever in my life, I'm getting my makeup done.
Right.
I look over, there's this lady sitting next to me, a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't pay her much attention. And as her makeup's being done, she's getting louder and louder and louder. But obviously I can't look around because
I'm getting a lot is going on, done, yeah. Right?
Makeup finishes, I look over and it's Lulu, the British sensational singer.
Yeah.
And I had like, it's almost like an epiphany.
Yeah.
Like it was so strong. And it was like, oh my God. You know, I was searching for like, what's my calling in life? What am I supposed to do?
And it hit you.
After being so lost.
Yeah.
And then this is how the call-in came to me. Looking at her going, 45 minutes ago, I didn't know who she was. But through the power of eyeshadow, lipstick, makeup, through a brush, a character, a persona, like Lulu came to life. And I almost was like, oh my God, imagine doing that for a living. Imagine through the power of makeup, invoking this soul energy into another human being. Like I still get emotional.
Yeah, I can tell.
Talking about it. Making them not only just look beautiful, but to feel beautiful. Mm. Wow, what a gift to give to humanity. Mm. What a gift to give to another human being. And making someone feel so strong, so powerful, that they can take on the world. Wow, this is what I want to do. And to be a makeup artist, it was... from my soul, it was the power of being able to touch another human being and to bring out this beauty in them physically, emotionally, so they can go out there in the world and rule it. And it was like knowing how lost I'd felt to know that this is what I was meant to do. Oh, it was like, right, I know what I want to do. I know where I want to go with this. Now, show me the way to do it.
Yeah, and that was the how.
And the how was magical.
Mm.
It was, that was just another, another journey.
Oh my God. Well, before we get on to that, I love what you just said. And this is a question I've been thinking about asking you, because this is something people have asked me, something that people have complained about. But you know how in today's world, a lot of times there are questions raised about why do women wear makeup?
Yeah.
Right. And I've been told, because I wear makeup when I'm on camera and I'm not dependent on makeup. I would happily go out without makeup on. There are some people who are not comfortable doing that. And somebody did ask me why, especially given that your whole kind of like mission is to empower women, why are you so dependent on putting makeup on? Like, why are you using this as, you know, like something like a filter that you're putting on your face because before going on camera? So my question is, how do you respond to people who still question in a negative way the use of makeup by women?
So first of all, I believe makeup is the most powerful, empowering tool. Through a power of a lipstick, it's the confidence makeup gives you. And, you know, it's personal choice. Those that don't want to wear it, don't believe in it, high five, respect to you. But those that want to do, makeup is the part of you where you get to experiment. You get to have fun. You can have a smoky eye and a nude lip one day. You can have an eyeliner and a fuchsia lip. Why not play? Why not experiment?
Mm-hmm.
Why not be the most creative, fun part of you? Every woman has the right to feel beautiful. And if makeup empowers you to feel and look beautiful, more power to you. And those people that don't believe in the makeup, I'm sure they take a shower every day.
Yeah.
Right? I'm sure they wash their hair.
Yeah.
I'm sure they brush their teeth. I'm sure they wear perfume.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, why are you washing? Why are you showering? To feel clean, to feel, you know, present yourself in the world in a clean, glamorous way.
Yeah.
And if makeup is not part of that journey for you, respect.
Mm-hmm.
And also the best thing about makeup, the fact that it is so playful, it washes off. You can, okay, hair, you cut your hair, you shave your head. Okay, it's going to take weeks and months for it to grow back. Makeup, you know, you don't like it, take a wipe, wash it off.
It's gone, yeah.
Why not? And what is, think about when there's an event or a wedding, right, where everyone comes together. What's the most joyous part of it?
Getting ready.
These are my looks for the day.
Yeah.
What? How are you going to do your makeup? Like, makeup is bonding as well. Oh, I'm going to do this. Do you think I should do this? Oh, I just think makeup is, you know, how far you take it, how, where, you know, it's it's up to you. It can be from a little bit of mascara to a full-on glam.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Have fun.
Right. And I love what you said, that red lipstick, for example, can bring out the confidence in a woman. And I feel the same. I know whenever which color lipstick I wear and how I feel about it. That's definitely true. But do you also think that makeup sometimes is linked to also like a self-esteem issue as well?
Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
And, you know, every single person on this planet at some point doubts themselves. This is human nature. And it's part of the human psyche. And if we can have a little pleasure with makeup, and what has been really fascinating about the makeup journey, and I really think it's generational.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me explain what I mean by that. Okay, so I remember when I told my parents that I'm going to be a makeup artist. First of all, growing up with the parents that I had, girls shouldn't wear makeup, lipstick makes your lip black. If you wear foundation, you'll damage your skin. Mm. So that generation were very anti-makeup.
Yes.
And when I moved to the Middle East as well, you could tell, like, a certain generation wore one look. It was dramatic for the Middle Eastern woman, but it was the same style that they wore for decades.
Mm.
Even my family, anti-makeup. Even if it was a wedding, baby powder, baby lotion, baby powder, and a swipe of lipstick.
Yeah.
So they had very regimented standards of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And makeup was almost like a taboo.
Mm.
As the generations go on, as social media started coming in, as people, you know, now your face, you know, you never know when you're going to meet someone and take a selfie. Mm. Like now, the streets are your runway.
Mm.
Life on social media, people documenting what they're eating, what they're wearing. It's become part of people's life. And I find it really interesting. My aunties that were so anti, you're going to be a makeup artist? Now there's a wedding in the family. Oh, we need to book the hair and makeup artist now. We need to book them. So I really think those that refuse to wear makeup are now booking hair and makeup artists.
Yes.
So I think it's about adapting to makeup as society evolves and changes. And I also believe makeup has evolved too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100% for sure. But now going back to your incredible journey as a makeup artist, you've worked with some incredible people. What are some of your most memorable stories that you would love to share?
Oh my God, I've had so many, but I think some of the most memorable is, first of all, you know, when you look at a celebrity, define the word celebrity in my from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
A celebrity is every single woman who I meet, and if I have the honor to do their makeup. Because even a housewife in her own life has the leading role.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you're an actress or whether you're in the public eye or whether you're a businesswoman or whether you're a stay-at-home mom, for me, you're a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people that I've worked with range from Hollywood to Bollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And I have touched probably the most famous faces
oh, wow.
on the planet. And the one thing I have to say is each one is unique. Each one has their own personality. But a few that I really stand out to me is definitely Steven Tyler. Mm-hmm. Going on tour with him was such an amazing experience. And I spend a lot of time with him and doing his makeup on a private jet mm-hmm. while it's landing in Bangalore
oh, wow.
was definitely one of the most interesting places I've ever done makeup.
Nice. Okay. But tell us more. Some of the Bollywood stars.
Oh, my God. The Bollywood stars, they are...
Who's your favorite?
All of them. All of them. But I love Sonam. Mm. I just think she is the
she
most
has redefined stunning, fashion a little.
Beautiful. To me, she changed the fashion industry. Her and Rhea changed 100%. The fashion industry in India.
Mm.
Like, honestly, those two girls, so much love and respect for them. They bought beauty. They bought makeup. They bought fashion to the world.
They did.
And I really believe that.
Mm. How was she working with her?
The most kindest, loving human being you could ever meet.
Mm. Oh, that's amazing. And how does it feel for you to work with all of these celebrities and, you know, being so close to them and basically having their faces in your hand? How do you manage it? What was it like the first time?
I think you get nervous because, like, you don't get nervous because of your art.
Yeah.
You get nervous because... So here's the thing. Each celebrity has a specific way of doing their makeup
mm-hmm.
because their face is their brand.
Right.
How they portray themselves in the world is their image.
Mm-hmm.
The way you do their makeup is to bring out that image, especially right. for the red carpet. Because if they look in the mirror and feel amazing,
mm.
you know they're going to go on that red carpet and they're going to own it.
Yes.
So, and, but I never saw it like that. I was always like, oh, let me just do my makeup. It's mm-hmm. only later that I was like, the impact that you have when someone tells me that, oh, they had their makeup done and they did not like it at mm. all. They had to wash their face, you know, and it was like that could impact them emotionally so much.
Mm.
So, but I was never aware of that when I used to work with them because yeah. to me, it was like, okay, I'm doing your makeup for the first time and I'm learning a new language.
Mm.
I'm learning the language of your face.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you like certain things.
Yes.
Please tell me what your special nuances are, and I will do exactly what you want me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was probably my biggest strength. Instead of coming in going, okay, I'm going to do what I think looks.
I know what looks right. Yeah.
I know what looks right on you. And I think that was a big difference because, like Katrina Cave loves her eyelashes separated with a safety pin.
Okay.
And that's one of her...
With a safety pin.
Like, she really likes her separated
oh my goodness.
Eyelashes.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, if that's what makes you comfortable. Other are like, okay, I have this thing where I overdraw my lip
mm-hmm.
and I need my lip in a certain way.
Yeah.
So I'm like, fine, show me how you like it.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time they do it, they're like, you see? And then I'm like, okay. So it's like me doing a crash course.
Yeah.
So I go in as a student.
Yes. You take notes about everything.
Yeah. And
want.
I'm like, okay, so you like it like this. Some celebrities like, I do not want any base at all.
Mm.
Others are like, you layer me up.
Yeah.
Layer me up and then add more.
Yes.
So it all depends.
So it's like you do a consultation first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I always ask for more time, especially the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, please give me at least 90 minutes. But once I've learnt your...
Then it's done.
Then I can do it in 30 minutes. But please allow me the time to get to learn how you like things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do, you know, sometimes they're like, well, what do you think? Make a suggestion. mm-hmm. and I'll make it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're like, oh my God, love it, let's go with it. Mm-hmm. And other times they're like, okay, no, this is not me. I think it's pushing it.
Not ready.
And it's a conversation.
Yeah.
And I think the key is listening. Listening and really understanding their perspective.
Mm. Wow. Okay. And now you are in Dubai, right? And how long have you been here for?
20 years.
Wow. And was that the plan or was that not the plan?
No. Originally, I had no idea I'd be living in Dubai.
So how did you end up here?
How did I end up here? So back to London.
Mm-hmm.
And after that epiphany, I'm going to go to makeup school. And I'm going to study makeup.
Mm.
So I went to Glauco Rossi mm-hmm. makeup school in London, did mm-hmm. a 3-month course. And because I had friends in the industry, they were like, look, we can help you with contacts. We
right.
can help you with getting jobs. And so I finished my course and divine intervention. It was meant to be. My very first job was working for Tony Blair.
Oh, wow.
This was 1995. And it was a campaign for, he was about to be prime minister mm-hmm. for the Labour government.
Mm-hmm.
My second job was that I became head makeup artist of MTV Europe.
Oh, wow.
And it was a show called Hanging Out.
Okay.
And MTV was huge at that time.
Oh yeah, at that time it was.
Yeah, so every afternoon, the show was from 2 o'clock till 5 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And every show would have a celebrity and a band.
Mm.
3 weeks of leaving makeup school, I am now working on, the Spice Girls came in, Lenny Kravitz came in, Oasis had come in, like it was,
oh,
even the Muppets had come in. And I was like, can you remember I was in your video at the back? And now I'm doing their makeup.
Yeah.
So that was like 3 weeks. So it was meant to be. And then one day I get a call out of the blue. And it was like, hi, we've heard about you. 3 weeks of leaving college. We're opening a makeup store in Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on like a Sephora style.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to come out for 3 months and we want you to train like the makeup team.
Got it.
Here.
Mm.
So I'm like, sure. Oh, by the way, it's working for the Kuwaiti royal family. So I was like, and you'll be meeting Sheikh Majid in London. He will tell you what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you just need to come out for 3 months.
That's
so
amazing.
I'm like, sure, of course I'll go. And I remember, got to Kuwait and he's like, okay, next day you're going to come to the royal palace. You're going to meet the princesses of Kuwait who were absolutely stunning,
mm.
like beyond. And off we went, got there and she's like, oh, I looked at her, I'm like, wow, you mm. are gorgeous. She's like, please, can you do my makeup? I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
Here's me, Sheen, thinking I'm this little hotshot from London, swagging it on the way to the royal bathroom. She's like, oh, can you do something natural? I'm like, of course.
Mm.
So I did a little bit of gold, mm-hmm. bit of bronze, UK.
UK natural.
UK natural.
Yeah.
She took my hand. She's like, my darling, I wouldn't wear this makeup to the bathroom.
Ooh. Ooh.
You know cheese to a cheese grater?
Yeah, just grater.
That my ego was now a big puddle on the floor. So I'm like, what do you mean you wouldn't wear this? Anyway, she then told me, 1997, okay? Mm-hmm. Full coverage foundation.
Mm-hmm.
10 shades lighter than your own skin tone. So you almost go blue-gray.
Yeah.
Batman winged eyes. Neon tube lighter highlighter. Dark lip liner.
And a different color.
And then the ombre.
Mm.
And I looked at it going, that to me is Cirque du Soleil. Yeah, and she was like, yeah.
Now that's you, a natural yeah, look.
Now you understand? Kuwaiti natural.
Oh, my goodness.
So then I started, with the store opened, met the most amazing. I would say that was my beauty school. Because as the customers were coming in and the makeups, like theater, drama, you know what you see on Instagram today? Yeah. We were doing that then.
They want the flair.
Yeah, it was like, and then I remember I'd go to Fashion Week internationally and I'd come back. I'm like, oh, by the way, there's no mascara. There's no brow. Mm. There's, you know, it's a nude lip. And I would talk to these women and go, this is the trend. They're like, are you talking to us? Are you talking to us? And I'm like, yeah, but that's like what's happening in Milan. They're like, let them do whatever
they're doing.
And then I realized another really important aspect. It was, we're living in a region, basically the Eastern meets the Western.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to beauty, the West really started beauty trends from the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's first, before then it was Victorian and, yeah, you know, like nothing. So it was then the 20s, 30s, 40s, into the 60s, 80s. So their beauty, like trends, started literally 100 years ago because we're in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
You look at our region, beauty goes history down.
Back in the days.
Back to like BC, BC minus.
Yeah.
You can't change a culture, beauty standard,
mm-mm,
overnight.
Mm-mm.
And I realized how powerful beauty was in this region. How eyes, brows, it doesn't matter. Gohol-lined eyes are a staple.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen our mothers do it, our grandmas do it. You can't come back from a fashion week and go, right, there's no mascara, there's no... because you're dealing with a historical, cultural root of beauty. And that's the first time I would say I really started to appreciate beauty in this region because it is dramatic. It is, you know, the line, the eyes tell a story, and oh, it was like, okay, this is home for me. This is where I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I know my 3 months are over, but I want to stay.
Yeah.
I really want to stay here. I want to explore Middle Eastern beauty. And then I got approached by a global brand to say, we're opening in Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
Sheen, the way I ran to the distributor's office in Al Shire, and I'm like, you need to hire me. Mac is coming into the Middle East. Mm. And they're like, huh? What? I'm like, it's... And they're like, we've never heard of it. I'm like, trust me, because it was huge in the UK.
Mm.
You need me. So they hired me as the store manager. Then I became the regional trainer for the whole Middle East region. And then they were like, okay, we need you to move to Dubai. We're now giving you the position of the global senior artist.
Wow.
But you're going to now open India.
Mm.
I'm going to Bollywood. Oh, my God. I'm actually going to Bollywood, you know?
Mm.
And landing in India to open, launch MAC in India. It was like, oh, my God. Called my parents to go, remember that career? You did not believe in me. Look where I am now.
Mm.
And my proudest moment was when my parents walked the red carpet for the IFA Awards, sat in the front with all their favorite celebrities around them, watching the show, going, wow, we never dreamt that this day would come.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was...
But how did it feel for you? When did it finally kind of like you realized that I made it?
So when I moved to the Middle East, my family were like, oh, I wonder what she's doing out there. wonder what's happening. You know, like the... So I went through so much. Like, I had to fight a system. I had to fight a culture. I had to fight a mindset. Even I remember I'd go home in, you know, during my holidays, and they're like, oh, you know, so-and-so wants her eyebrows waxed. And I'm like, but that's... That's not what I do. Like, they just would not understand it. It was when the IFA, going to Bollywood, doing covers for Vogue, Elle, starting working with, you know, at that time when I got to Bollywood, Sonam and Deepika were coming out. Mm-hmm. I worked with Bipasha Basu, I worked with Deepika, I worked with Rani Mukherjee, like, you name the celebrities, Vidya Balan, like, I started doing all of their makeup and even now, to this point, there's no social media. So you'd have to wait for the magazine to come out. I would then have to DHL it to my mum.
So they see your name.
So they see it, and then they would show the magazine around. Imagine.
Such a different time, isn't
it? Yeah, like 20 years of my life was not even seen because it's not on social media.
That's incredible, isn't it? But for you, like, for example, of course you hustled your way into getting the job and then you were sent to India. But what do you think contributed to the success once you were there? Was it your network?
I think, first of all, being part of a global brand, the fact that they were waiting for this brand to launch in India, the excitement of this brand launching obviously puts you on... you know, like a pedestal, because now all of a sudden you've got this massive brand behind you. And as everyone comes to meet you, you're the global representative. And I think the fact that I was Gujarati, I was Indian, that I could connect with everyone. Obviously, they laughed at my Hindi because I spoke English. But there was that cultural connection. And it was the connection of food, the connection of...
culture.
Culture. So I think that broke a lot of barriers. Because if I'd opened in Sweden... it would have been different. So, and I really felt like I'd come home. I really felt like this is where I want to be.
That's amazing. So you've been in Dubai for 20 years. And we were just discussing, I would love for you to reshare what you told me about... how you summarize being in Dubai, especially with the highs and the lows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, it's an interesting... Dubai is a magical, magical place. And I really... your dreams come true. If you want to come here, because geographically, and this... so I'm very spiritual. And I do a lot of meditations. So I go to a lot of spiritual groups as well. And I remember once talking to one of the teachers and going, I love being here, but the challenge is that I'm just emotionally, I feel emotionally unstable. And she was like, of course, think about, when you think about Dubai as where it is, it's in the desert. It's very close to the equator. That's why it's so hot. The heat. So you're very close to the stars. It's almost like you can touch the stars. Anything you want manifests so quickly. Dreams get manifested so much quicker. However, the fact that you are on sand, the highs are so high, but then the lows are so low because you're constantly... you know how standing on sand isn't stable?
No.
You know, you go...
because the sand shuffles, right?
So you're constantly shuffling between these emotions. And it really, really made sense to me, especially living alone. Because when you have this amazing life and then you come back and there's no one there to share it with. So it's like you have to share it with yourself. And that's where, it can be challenging. It can be really challenging, but magical as well.
Ooh, I love... okay, we've touched onto the subject of being alone, right? Yeah. So How does your Gujarati Indian family react to you not having been married at this age?
Well, I think because of my success, they don't question it.
Really?
Yeah, it's really. And because I live on the other side of the world. So they're all in the UK.
Yes.
I live on the other side of the world. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm like, my schedule is so busy that even if whatever they're saying, I don't get to hear it. Mm-hmm. And secondly is with the divorces that all of my family and cousins are going through, what are they going to say?
Yeah.
Right? Because
how do they sell it?
Yeah. How are they going to say? Like, how many people do I know going through divorces, children involved? At least I'm on my own, minding my business, working hard, and they have a holiday home to come to whenever they want.
That's true. But, you know, I feel like people my age, people younger than me, older than me, I keep meeting these wonderful women, and there is a real struggle at the moment to find the right partner. Yeah. Of course, some women are very happy the way they are and they're not actively looking, completely fine. But people who are interested in looking and are looking for a partner are finding it really hard to find the right partner for themselves. And it's getting more and more, especially with women. I feel like I keep hearing it and I keep seeing it as well, where, you know, their age are rising and then women are now getting stressed out about having children. A lot more people are getting their eggs frozen. But why do you think that is happening?
Okay, so I, first of all, right. I really, this is like,
sorry.
No, it's a great
small question.
Yes, tiny, tiny, tiny one. So I think we as a society are so codependent, and our, so much of our identity is based on who we're with, who our children are, who our family is, what we do for a living, what our job title is. We define ourselves by everything externally except ourselves. And being in a relationship is another codependent relationship. Now, here's the thing. When you are so externally looking for internal validation, you're always going to be empty. Because if any of those things leave or go, you've lost your identity because you've attached it onto something or someone else. And being in a relationship and asking, first of all, it's hard enough being with yourself, right? It's hard enough to get to know who you are. And then we're in a relationship to ask another human being to fulfill a part of us that is needy. First of all, how much pressure is that to put on to another human being? Imagine being in a relationship going, I need you to make me feel worthy, to make me feel safe, to be there when I'm there, you know, to be sit with me at dinner at 8 o'clock because I can't bear to have dinner on my own. I need you to wake up next to me because I'm so terrified of living alone. You put that pressure on another person. First of all, it's unfair. Secondly, this is why relationships break up and people start fighting. Because imagine if someone did that to you, that you're responsible for sleeping next to them so they don't have to wake up alone. You have to be there at eight so they don't eat alone. You've got your own life to live and yet you're having to fulfill another person's need. I really believe that to really find the true partner, you have to become that version of your of you. And it need you need to become so strong and needy within yourself, strong and fulfilled, that if anyone needy comes to you, you're like, I'm sorry, but no, you deal with that. That's your issue that you need to deal with. Don't you put that on me. I'm not responsible for that. And having the strength to actually say, no, that's your issue, you deal with it, I think is, but you need to find yourself first.
Mm.
And that journey of finding yourself, that is the journey of life.
Yeah, that is tough. And I think a lot of people end up settling because of that, what you mentioned, that fear of being lonely,
yeah,
and of dying alone, or just, you know, not having children, or then who's going to look after you, which I think is problematic in its own way, because then you're having children so that someone will look after you in your old days.
Okay, so let me talk as a much older woman.
Okay,
having
much older.
Much older than you. Having gone through this neediness, okay? So I have learned three lessons in life. Three really big lessons. November 2020, when we were in the midst of the pandemic, I got made redundant from a job that I loved. It was my life. It was my lifestyle. And it was the most magical 21 years of my life. However, my identity was attached to it. Mm-hmm. I was so needy of it, okay? I was also in a relationship that if it wasn't my job, it was this person.
Yes.
And both of them just fulfilled my life and my time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to get married. I'm going to have kids. Like, it was, oh, I was like, wow, I'm living this, I'm living the dream.
Yes.
Oh, it's magical. November 2020, both of them gone. Like, literally, I'm 50 years old and I am like sitting alone in my apartment, losing the job of my dreams, the person of my dreams at 50. And it was, wow. Who am I? Like, literally, who am I? I don't know who I am. And it was the most gut-wrenchingly painful yet rewarding time of my... You know that Selena Gomez song, I had to lose you to love me?
No,
literally, I didn't know what it meant.
Okay.
When she was singing it, I had to lose you to love me.
Yeah.
I did not know what it meant. Oh, November 2020, the universe was like, you're going to find out what that means, okay? Mm. And woke up the next day going, oh, wow, I have nothing, like literally nothing. But my identity was so attached to everyone else except me. Who Vimi Joshi? Who was she? I remember phoning around to say, hey, I'm available, I'm free. Let me know when you need me. They're like, oh, could you send us your rate card and your invoicing details? And I'm like, what's a rate card? And how do you invoice? Like, what language are you talking? Mm. Like, imagine I did not know.
Mm-hmm.
That's how raw I had been stripped down. And then it was like, okay, now I've got to find who I am.
Mm-hmm.
Who I am without the job, without the person. But how? How do you find out who you are?
Where do you start?
Again, I'm on YouTube, like, you know, you're crying, going, how to find yourself, how to do a rate card, how to create an invoice. Yeah. You know, like, you're back to basics.
Mm.
And I came across, he's an angel in my life. It's a man called Kyle Cease.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to be a comedian. And again, went through the epiphany and he's become almost like a spiritual teacher. But I heard one of his podcasts on, and it was like the universe had sent me like an angel to listen to this man.
Mm.
And I started listening to this person, Kyle Cease.
Mm-hmm.
And he changed my life because everything I was going through, it was exactly what, it was like God talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, like, you start these meditations where you just sit in silence and you just listen to what's going on within you.
Mm.
And I would, his teachings made me find me. His teachings gave me the strength to be who I am today. And to know thyself means to purge, number one, your old limiting beliefs, your neediness, your co-addiction, your addiction to other people. You know, it was shocking to see how much we fill our day mm-hmm. with how much we fill our day externally.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually sit there with ourselves in silence.
Yeah.
And letting, you know, like all that pain come out, knowing once that's purged, magic can come in. Mm. And it's almost like you're doing a soul upgrade because you're almost like purging the 3D.
Yeah.
And you're moving higher into a different dimension. And in this different dimension, magic starts coming through you.
Mm.
And Kyle sees, wow, thank him. So knowing, through his teachings, I got to know myself.
Yeah.
The second one was then, because you've lost your sense of self-worth, right?
Mm.
Because
100%.
Then you have to start believing in yourself.
Mm.
And it was only when I started doing my website where I'm like, oh my God, I did this.
I did all of this.
Oh my God. So that's when you start believing in yourself.
Mm.
And then the third is aligning yourself into feeling worthy of receiving.
Mm.
I think that's a big channel, especially if you're an empath, because we're always there for everyone.
Yeah, you're just giving.
Giving, giving, giving. But for us to receive is like, it's probably the hardest thing to do.
Mm.
But through Kyle, he literally teaches you how to receive. Because people were like, what's your rate? I couldn't say it.
No.
I physically could not say. I'm like, whatever you want, you know, like a charity. Yeah, you know, like,
I'll do it for free.
I'll do it for free. I literally put the word free into freelancer.
Mm.
I gave that title a meaning.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So these are your three
lessons. Yeah.
I love it. So if we were to summarize the three lessons, the first one was don't let external validation define who you are.
And know yourself.
Know yourself.
Yeah.
The second one?
Believe in yourself.
Believe in yourself. And the third one?
Be worthy enough to receive.
Love that. That's beautiful.
Get worthy to receive.
Mm.
And it all starts at that. Because if our identity is attached to everyone else, you're only worthy if that person validates you.
Yeah.
How many times have you been in a relationship and your whole day, right, you're waiting for that one text and then that one text comes and you're like, oh my God.
Your day's made.
But imagine giving that power away. What if that text didn't come?
Mm.
What if they broke up with you?
Mm.
Shift that energy onto yourself. Whether the text comes or not, I'm still going to have a wonderful day.
Right. Why give this power over your whole mood to someone else?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can't control them.
Yeah. And when people used to say, know yourself,
yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, that's so easy. But I actually did not know what it actually meant until.
Wow. Well, I have a final question for you, Mimi, who I ask all of my guests this question.
Yeah.
What does success mean to you?
What does success mean to me? Success means to me being able to inspire, empower other people.
Mm.
Success means being able to live a lifestyle you would like to live. And success also means is sharing that lifestyle with your friends and family.
Wow. I like it. Do you have anything else you'd like to share with us?
Like just an example would be like my parents who loved Bollywood so much growing up, like my whole family. It was such a big family. Every Sunday, we would sit there.
Same.
Right? And watch whatever movie was coming on as a family. And then success for me is when my family came to India to the IFA Awards and me taking my mom to go, hi, mom, meet so-and-so. Mom, meet so-and-so. And just the look on my parents' and uncles' and aunts' faces to go, oh, like that to me was wow, to share that success and to inspire and to empower others.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you for being here. This was a lovely conversation.
Thank you.
I hope you had fun.
I loved it. I loved it.
So did I. Thank you so much. And hopefully see you next time.
Definitely.